welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic is healing the pain of job loss. Now, either you were unfairly terminated years ago, or this cruel attack to your self-esteem just happened the other day. Either one, unless you've processed the pain and the hurt, those feelings of loss will come back for you. They'll hurt your job interviews, and they will prolong getting employed and make you unemployed for a very long time. To discuss this topic with me, I'm joined by a special co-host, Tom Board. Tom is out of Denver, Colorado, and Tom is one of our preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see Tom's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Tom.
Hi, John. Glad to be with you this afternoon.
Good to have you here again. Tom has been assisting men and women with their career advancement since 1990, and that's over 22 years. He has a master's degree in counseling, and he oversees his private counseling practice in the Denver, and actually in the greater Denver area. Since 1990, Tom has completed over 2,500 career advancement assessments using the IDAC Career Match system. Tom, you and I are going to be talking about our topic for the first 15, maybe even 30 minutes of our show, and then we will move to job seeker questions that we have received regarding people seeking employment. So let's jump right into this sticky topic and provide some good advice that will hopefully heal and empower people to move ahead. And Thomas, we had prepared for this show. I'm going to take the lead here, and then since you are the veteran counselor, way ahead of me on some of these issues of dealing with hurt and pain, I'm looking forward to getting your pearls of wisdom. So let me just start out by giving a brief overview. Getting fired happens to just about everyone at some point in time, and particularly for men, this is a challenge to our self-respect. When there are unfair situations that occur, and they're normally either political or really things build up to the point where you get the pink slip, you're terminated. And there usually are very clever ways employers can devise to get rid of you and make it your fault, when in fact you know that it had nothing to do with your performance. But the pain is real. Now, here's the danger. If you haven't processed that pain, if that emotion is still there of anger or disappointment or hurt, it is going to come back and bite you in your job search. And the way it does is causing suspicion or causing you to be somewhat distant when entering into the dialogue of the appointment or the job search interview. What this means is you are looking at that employer and you're thinking, is this person going to do to me like the last employer did? That last employer did me dirt, he hurt me, he challenged my reputation. And are you the kind that's going to do that? Well, while you're sizing up that employer, you're supposed to be answering very positive, energetic, motivated questions. And what's coming across subliminally is this hesitation and these squinting eyes and this look of, I'm checking you out. Well, you may be totally oblivious to this, but guess what? The employer is comparing you to the next applicant, and the previous applicant don't have that problem. and you are sticking out like a sore thumb, and you are out, you are eliminated, and you'll never know why. No one's going to tell you. Another way this is going to hurt you is you're going to avoid questions that have to do with that sensitive issue that caused you to be terminated. And you're going to hope you never get answered, and you're therefore going into the interviewing process on the defense instead of the offense. Well, that's what builds us into the momentum of this topic, meaning that we want to address this head on. We don't want to put it under the table or pretend it never existed. So let's move ahead with two important steps. First, we're going to try to understand this powerful emotion of grief and hurt. And second, we're going to develop some positive steps to move ahead. Now, as we move to understand this emotion of grief, let's try to grab a hold of it and not brush it off. Tom, can you give us a handle on really trying to define how important this is, that we shouldn't just brush it off?
Right, right. Well, first of all, John, let me just say that everyone handles grief differently. So there's not a one-fit-all how people kind of handle the loss that they're experiencing. But it's a very real thing that we sense something has been taken away from us, that there's something that's missing, there's something that's not right within us. And I think the first thing for each of us to know is that it's very, very real, and we're all going to experience it in different ways, but we have to address it. If we try to get away from it, like you were saying before, it has a way of kind of creeping up on us. And many times people that I've worked with, they'll tell me that grief doesn't come as a fixed space. It kind of comes in waves. So it kind of comes at different times when you're not expecting it. So it becomes very important to kind of put words to this, and that's one of the ways to begin to help a person with that is to begin to do that. So I think it's important to let yourself begin to enter into it, to ask the things, what is it bringing up, what you're feeling, and to realize just how important it is to realize that this loss actually is going to have an impact on you at some level.
Yeah, I liked the term you used when we were preparing for this show, and that is the dark hole.
Right.
That kind of evokes a graphic image, you know, who wants a dark hole? And as long as that dark hole exists, there's the fear of falling in.
Right.
And you can't go into a job interview if you're carrying around this dark hole. You just might get sucked right into it, and then the problem is you're trying to crawl out, and the employer is wondering what is going on. This person is backpedaling. They're defensive. Or just the opposite, they're trying to be overly on the offense to try to avoid going into this dark hole.
That's correct.
Now, Tom, what about this emotion of grief or anger about this painful experience? Does this thing eventually go away, or is it going to stay there forever?
Well, that's a great question, John, and a lot of people believe that you can get past it, you can get away from it, that you can kind of get over it. And what I tell people, it's a little surprising, is that grief in itself really doesn't go away. It's just that we learn how to incorporate it into our life. So it's not all that we are. We do experience grief, and many times people that are grieving and angry, it feels like it consumes their whole life at that place. It just becomes very consuming. It defines everything, like we were talking about the dark hole. But the truth is, it's not. There's more to who we are, but at that moment, it's hard to see that. So it becomes really important and I think everybody's a little different, to be able to get a perspective that's larger than just the grief. So it really doesn't go away. Like, some things have happened to me. I look back 20, 30 years ago, and it brings back a memory, and I feel really sad. I remember the grief of some things that happened years ago. Now, it doesn't paralyze me, but I still feel it. It's still there. So it's very important to realize it doesn't go away, but it doesn't define us either. It's something that we can kind of realize there's more to who we are to enter life back into with.
So if I'm hearing you, you're suggesting that on the positive side, it's not we're supposed to erase or put our energy into erasing or deleting this grief. That's wasted energy.
Right.
What we've got to do is start building something up that proves that we are bigger than the grief, that we're not going to let this grief overcome us and render us victims and immobile, but that building process doesn't come automatically. We have to exert some very focused energy into this rebuilding. Is that fair to say?
That's really true. And there are things that we can do in some practical ways just physically to help ourselves. And I tell clients that I'm working with simple things like exercising and eating well and trying to sleep well. All those things usually are disruptive. When a person's experiencing loss like this, is that they don't want to do anything, they don't want to eat well, they don't want to sleep, or they can't sleep. And so I'm trying to help them with very practical things like that to begin to help them with just their life, to kind of move in a different direction, to keep living, to realize that you don't end at this place.
Yes, and we both know that if this sadness, disappointment, being consumed by this loss lasts more than 2 weeks, we could be right on the edge of some serious discouragement and depression, and now we need to call in some medical assistance to help us get over that. Because as you said earlier, that we all respond to these things differently, and if the nature of the employer's dismissal just was quite hurtful, and I'm even thinking of a situation where somebody's working for a family business, and mom or dad fired the daughter or son or son-in-law or daughter-in-law, and so it wasn't just the job, it was a whole relational thing that got whacked off at the knees. Well, it's going to take a while to get over this one, and it's going to surface every time there's Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthdays, get-togethers. It's pretty important. So taking care of ourselves, making sure that we're into a rhythm of living that is watching out for things that are going to undermine us above and beyond the nature of the pain is very important. Now, we're going to come to a break very quickly, Tom, and after the break, we want to move to some positive steps to build. But can just quickly, can you help us with reading the signs of this two-week process where this thing is consuming us and we're just not even able to think beyond? It's just the minute we wake up in the morning and there we go. Well, we'll have to get this after the break, Tom.
That'd be great.
Okay, John, we have a short two-minute break. Today we have been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Well, tell me, John, what does a poor job fit look like, say, for someone in their mid-40s?
Well, Evan, that time can actually be one of despair or even great opportunity.
What do you mean, despair or opportunity? Those appear to be opposites.
Well, they are. A person in their mid-40s is beginning to realize that the first half of their work life is over, and yet they have developed a very deep habit pattern.
What kind of pattern?
Well, the pattern of going to work and putting up with less than a fulfilling job. The pattern of not looking forward to doing something with meaning and purpose. The pattern of seeing the glass half empty rather than half full.
Wait a minute. This is sounding like the old power of positive thinking.
Yeah, I guess so, in a way. I am saying that each person has to look at him or herself in the mirror and ask, do I have what it takes to make a difference, to break out of the routine and set a new course?
Well, hold it right there. I see a surge coming on, and we have run out of time on this break. Just keep that momentum and continue to tell us about breaking the old habits and setting a new course when we have our next break, okay?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic is healing the pain of job loss, and I'm joined to discuss this by Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture and bio by just clicking Preferred Counselor on our website. So, Tom, just before the break, we were making the transition from understanding the power and the dynamic, the negative dynamic of what this, it's a common malady for anyone that's working. They're going to get fired at some point in their life, and it's going to be, unfortunately, a negative experience. And so we need to be proactive to overcome this. We're not going to get rid of the grief, but we need to build up our assets, and we need to build up so that we can move on into the future. So let me take the first step on building some positive steps to move ahead.
Okay.
First thing, and this is interesting, we're starting on a negative here, is do not go online and start applying for jobs. Why not? Well, if you were hurt in a job termination, you're going to start looking at these jobs, and you're still feeling the insecurity, the loss, and the disappointment. It is going to be a negative filter for the types of jobs you apply for. And you're going to start some soul searching while you're looking at these jobs. It's going to keep making that dark hole bigger and bigger and bigger. So before you go online starting to look for jobs, we have to build back up your self-respect, self-esteem, all those credentials that you've had from years past so that you can tackle the job hunting process, the looking at vacancies, in a very positive way. So hold off, and we need to go to some basic steps to build up what's been torn down. Tom, why don't you take us to the next positive step we need to take?
Well, I think the next thing we need to do is to begin to kind of create, I guess the best way to say it is kind of formulate a different way of viewing and thinking about who you are and what's really happening inside of you. So we have all this pain, we have this loss, we have the anxiety of not being employed anymore. What I want to move towards is trying to remember what are the things that you did well, what are the things that you brought to your last couple of positions that actually represent some of the better qualities of who you are. The tendency when we have this loss is just to get so dark is that we start feeling like we have nothing to bring, you know, just feeling awful about yourself. Some people just get really mad at that place, and their anger kind of makes them feel like they have to defend everything, but it's not constructive. What we want to do is just very, in a very relaxed way, begin to write down some of the achievements, accomplishments that you've had so that you can use this later if you want to on a resume for future interviews. But the real important thing is for you to begin to have some positive thinking about yourself, where you've been, where you're wanting to go, what you bring to this. And so it becomes very, very important to push into this. And I tell people this is not just something you do in your mind. You need to sit down and write this out.
You got to write it down, yeah.
Absolutely. You need to get the words out. You need to kind of look at it, add a paragraph. Don't make it little bullet points. Just really write about yourself. And at the same time, maybe then begin to talk to others, friends, people that you have great confidence, they care about you, just to get the words out so that it becomes more of a sense, this is who I really am no matter what's happened here. There's something really good that I want to kind of focus on and believe in. And it's very important to kind of repeat these kind of sentences and thoughts because, you know, the scripture says, for the way we think is the way we act. And
yes.
So it becomes very important that we really, really constructively rethink about how we're looking at ourselves at this place.
Absolutely. Couldn't have been said better, Tom. You and I are in agreement on this. And what we're saying to the listener who's suffering from a sad or cruel situation, you got to build something up that's bigger that can confront the grief. And what that bigger item is, you can imagine, let's just say we've got a building and some wrecker has come by and has torn into that building. So the second story, the roof, the chimney has been torn down. We got to get in there and build that back up. And what's been torn down is the self-confidence and self-respect that was there previously. That was the first building that's now been smashed. We have to build it back up. And we have to build it with actual examples, and I like to say achievements and accomplishments. When I worked for so-and-so, I did this and this and this that was above and beyond the call of duty. And then when I worked for this organization, I did this and this and this. Now, the nice thing is those things need to end up on the resume and they need to be wordsmithed so they can be said easily without forcing it during an interview. So in a way, this exercise to build back up, to heal from the hurt, is a prelude to preparing the resume and getting ready for the job interview. And what I think you and I, Tom, are coming close to is somebody saying, well, you know, I guess I really am good at that. Instead of nobody's going to hire me, I can't do anything, they said I was a lousy manager, they said I was a lousy salesperson, look at all the problems that have occurred, and on and on and on. No. You did achieve those sales quotas. You did successfully manage all those people. That's why you got the promotion. And we want to acknowledge that. Now, Tom, you mentioned something about telling someone. I think that's another very positive drill that our listener should pursue, is to contact someone they respect and say, I need to talk to someone who could just listen so I can hear myself say these words. Now, they're not going to solve a problem. They're not going to do an attaboy. They're just going to listen, because saying it in from your lips is a prelude to what's going to happen in the job interview. And we need to do that. Now, Tom, We've got a third suggestion here that we're giving to our listener, and this is one that I've come up with from my years of experience, and that is take a sheet of paper and write down two or three questions which you hope an employer will not ask you during the interview. These questions would be ones where you feel vulnerable or are going to lead to that dark hole. Now, as long as they sit there without adequate answers, then you are protected. You're going to put a fence around that dark hole. We want to just get rid of that dark hole. And so by writing the questions down, you've taken the first step to resolving the problem, because now you want to write down the solution or the answer to those questions. This is something also to talk with this friend about. This is the question. Here's my response. What do you think? And you want to hear yourself say that. We're not professional actors, and we can't wait till the heat of the interview to wing it. We're just not that good. We can't just pull it off. We have to systematically, step by step by step, work through these problematic issues and be confident of the future interview. I can handle this. I know how to get through it. Tom, we got room for one more piece of constructive advice. Can you lay that one on us here?
Sure. I think one of the things, and we were talking about this, is that, you know, this is such a, usually it's a jolt to the system. We're not sure what to do with ourselves, how to use our time. We're trying to kind of think differently. We're wanting to kind of go in a different direction. And one of the things that is so helpful here is to really let yourself do some things that are really enjoyable, whether it's a hobby, a sport, just how to get outside of yourself, to do some things that put you in a really positive frame of mind. I mean, I've had some people that just love going out and digging in their garden. It just feels
like... I was
like,
just going to say that.
they just don't get a chance to do that. They've been working so much, and they get to go do that, and it's just really helpful to go do it. And I think it's really important to... in this process, to give yourself some space to do things that you love to do, even as you're trying to work through kind of moving forward and then the whole search process that you want to get into. So that's my only other thought. Do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, well, just to piggyback on that, Tom, I think that's excellent. I'm just thinking about, you know, there's this dark hole and there are all these negative voices speaking at you. And if all you have is shut up, I'm not going to listen to that negative voice, keep quiet, get out of here. That's really, you know, that makes for good rhetoric, but it doesn't help the emotions.
Right.
So to get the positive voices going, I mean, we've given a few tips on this, but to really turbocharge this thing and recharge the battery, nothing helps more than getting engaged. And I like to favor something physical. You're doing something just for the sheer joy of doing it. Now, we're not trying to go out and win friends and influence people and take... a group of colleagues out to lunch to rebuild relationships. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the gardening. We're talking about bicycling. We're talking about hiking. It might be reading poetry, but something that you can do every day that you look forward to at the end of the day. We're going to a break, Tom, and after that, we'll pick up on the job seeker questions.
All right, well, we're taking a short two-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about breaking out of long ingrained habits of going to work and just accepting less than a fulfilling job. John, in our last break, you started a surge to present a paradigm shift to break away from a dull work life.
Yeah, that's right, Evan. That is what I was attempting to do. You had commented earlier that this was a warmed-over version of the power of positive thinking, and actually I admit that in my earlier years, I read about some of the leaders in that movement for the purpose of looking for a nugget or two of truth. I did find something that has stuck with me all these years, and it's the power of the word believe.
You say believe.
That's right, believe. It means that those who believe with all their heart that it is possible to have a fulfilling career, they are more than halfway there. These clients just need some key aptitude test results, which they could validate.
You mean the on-location meeting with the person who has your job?
That's right. Once they find that person, and it doesn't take more than a couple of weeks, they can make the internal commitment to do what it would take to make it happen.
Well, what if they were way out on a cloud, unrealistic?
Well, that is what the counselor should provide, a sound, mature, practical buffer of what is real and possible for each person.
John, I want to hear more about this conviction process. I'm sure our listeners want me to fast forward to learn how it works. Can we pick it up at the next break?
Sure, no problem.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
We're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And you can see Tom's picture in bio. Just click on Preferred Counselors. Tom, it's that special time for us to listen and respond to questions about job hunting that we've received. So get us started. Pick from those questions so we can jump right in.
Okay. Well, the first question I have here is from Cindy, who's from Oregon. And her question is, I'm a frustrated dentist and wish I had studied a different profession. I love helping patients, but hate managing office personnel and marketing my business. I'm stuck with my building lease and payments for my education and equipment. Do you have some advice as how I can get out of this mess?
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you and I go to the dentist, and we have no idea how much debt they've had to accumulate in paying their educational expenses and all that equipment, the millions of dollars of equipment. We just are sitting there hoping that nothing bad's going to happen. At least I do. So, well, the first thing I think we need to acknowledge is that Cindy is stuck. There's just no way around it as far as having to keep money coming in for her current practice, and dentists are paid well, so Cindy needs a good, steady flow of income coming in. I think we've got two issues. One is the office personnel. It's very possible that Cindy is not really skilled at overseeing that, and it might be a good idea to get some help on evaluating the current office personnel and maybe hiring someone that can take care of things, get that monkey off Cindy's back. And it may be just another receptionist. We don't know how many people are in the office, but I would say that would be a very positive step and probably eliminate half of Cindy's angst in terms of her current job. Now, to get out of the profession of dentistry is definitely going to need some careful planning. What I would suggest is that Cindy, as her means of job hunting, needs to look into volunteering for some type of activity that takes her to that new career or new job. So it would be something positive, and that positive energy that she would get from the volunteering, serving in a nonprofit organization perhaps, or it would have to be a nonprofit, would then offset the angst that she has during the day. And she might adjust her schedule of patients so that one day a week she's only working half a day, so she can devote that time to this new endeavor. I do think it would be important for her to get some professional help in identifying what that future career would look like and how the volunteering could be a bridge to get her there. Tom, any further thoughts on this?
Well, the only other little thing that I could add here is another possibility that could be happening here is that maybe dentistry in itself would be something she would like to do, but because she dislikes the managing and marketing so much, it clouds her whole enjoyment of why she might have even gotten into that. So it's possible that if we could find someone that could help her do the managing, doing the marketing, she might discover that she still enjoys that. And I just don't know. Obviously, that would be something that we'd have to kind of try to help her professionally kind of find out for herself if that might be the case.
Yeah. Now, there are active and very good state dental associations, and meeting with the association director to discuss this would be a positive step, and there may be even some help that could be provided in terms of evaluating the office staff to determine what might be the source of the conflict and why there is this issue that's just causing Cindy a lot of grief and frustration. Okay, well, I think we've pretty much given that our best shot, Tom. How about we go to the next one?
All right, I got a gentleman here. His name is Chris from Washington. He says, I've been a truck driver, but this is not my skill or passion. I'm a musician, but I can't make a living at it. Is there some way to make a living as a musician and also raise a family?
Oh. Well, as I recall, Tom, you had an actress that was trying to make a living. How did she do?
Well, you know, it's really something. Both of my kids actually have degrees in fine arts. They're both in the music industry, in the theater industry. And it's fairly well known that you need to have another occupation with that. You need to be doing something else in the times that you're not performing and you're not having any income come in. So that's very typical of people that are in those kind of industries. And I mean, I've had the privilege of working with the few that have done really, really well. I mean, they're Grammy Award winners, things like that. But those are more the rare ones. So it's being aware of the fact that it's going to take at least a willingness to kind of do two things at the same time. One is your music and to begin to get that out there, but also to have another occupation where you can have an income coming in that can kind of support yourself. Love
yeah.
to hear any thoughts you might have.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement on that. The choice of the survival job is just as important as the need to continue growing your art form. And in this case, Chris is into music, but someone could be into sculpturing or photography or something else. And there needs to be a nurturing of that artistic form over time, over years, to the point where it is so exemplary that it's sufficient to draw income in and of itself. So Chris's intuition is saying, I really want time to work on my music, but here I've got this lousy job as a driver, And the answer to Chris's dilemma is not, you're not going to jump right in and get a job as a musician and have that pay for itself. So I think my approach would be that Chris evaluate different truck driving positions for different types of companies where his hours of driving are stable and he's able to come home after 5 o'clock in the evening. Certainly driving for express delivery organizations like UPS and FedEx, you want to investigate how stable and regular the hours are that would allow you to book musical engagements in the evening. That's where we're going. And also not have to drive on the weekends. So you've got time on the weekends to focus on the music. So I would go back and look at different truck driving positions in different companies where you're home at, or you quit work at 5 or thereabouts, and you don't have to work on the weekends, and that would give you the free time, and definitely get focused on the music and begin to develop that so ultimately someday your music is sufficient to replace the income you need from the driving. So I think that's about it, Tom. Let's take on another one.
All right. Let's see here. I have a lady. Her name is Mary from Oregon. And she says here, I'm a single mom with 3 children. I have a bachelor's degree with good work experience, but I have a passion for helping younger women who are single with children. How can I find a job in that field without a master's degree?
Well, that, you know, we get quite a few of these questions of women with children that are in low pay or dead end jobs. And what's nice about this particular question from Mary is that she's already defining what it is she wants, which is a major step ahead from others that are just, I'm working as a secretary, help, I need out of this, what should I do? So we have a good direction here. Now, it sounds like Mary's done some investigation, and she's run up against, in order to be a counselor, to work with younger women with that are single with children, you need a master's degree. And so my advice here, and help me on this, Tom, my advice would be that instead of pursuing the counseling or therapist job working with these younger women, that Mary try to get a job in the government, the county, city, state, or federal agencies that are helping women, and get a position in the agency rather than just go for the therapist position. So we've got government agencies, we've got nonprofit agencies, we've got ministry service agencies, probably not too many for-profit agencies. And we want a role where Mary has the opportunity to give advice and assistance. Could be something as simple as get out of debt, advice, assistance, mentoring, coaching that doesn't require the master's degree. Now, if after being employed there, we need to pick this up after the break, Tom.
All right, John.
So we're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can break out of the deep ingrained habit pattern of doing a dull job and choose to do something different. John, you made it sound so simple. You said all you have to do is believe.
Well, that's right, Evan. You recall the example to illustrate this point of what it means to believe. It's about the guy who says, "I will cross Niagara Falls on a tight wire pushing a wheelbarrow." This person has done the act many times at the state fair, but now he wants to do Niagara Falls.
Okay, I recall the illustration, and then the observer is asked, "Do you believe he can do it?"
Yep, that's it. The observer shrugs his shoulders and says, "Yeah, sure. He has done it before, no big deal." And then the question comes back to the observer. "Well, if you believe he can, well then hop in the wheelbarrow."
Okay, so it is that type of committed belief that it takes to break free of the deep ingrained habits of doing a dull job.
That's right.
So how does one muster up that belief to get there? Take an energy drink?
Well, we can think each step of that belief process needs to come in more bite-sized chunks, sort of like how do you eat an elephant, one bite at a time.
Okay, so what are the bites?
Well, the first bite is to discover how you are gifted with innate talent. Also, that your passion or inner stirring combined with that talent points to a valid actual career.
Okay, that's a good start. A person gets actual career titles on a printout report which your career match system provides.
That's right. Then we say, don't change any habits, don't quit your job right now. Just locate at least three people who each are in one of the different careers you like the most from our list.
Now, what do you mean, the list?
Well, after testing, we provide for our client a list of the top 10 best career matches from over 90,000 options, and they select the three from the 10 they want to research first.
Okay, and from that preferred selection, they go to meet the person in each of their careers to ultimately find the person who has their job.
That's right.
I get it. It is by meeting that person that the emotions come to play.
That's right. Like, I can't live without this new job. For the first time, I get to be free to be the real me and get paid for it. I want it now more than that lousy, dull job that I'm doing.
Okay, and is there still a higher level of belief to make that happen?
Well, yes. The final stage is counting the cost of what it will take to get hired. The counselor needs to map it out, and this means, if you really want this job, here is what it will take to get hired.
Okay, I get it. And then the belief sets in. I can do this. All I need is the dedication.
That's right. You said it correctly.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the drudgery of a job which lacks meaning and purpose to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring and find the best of 90,000 career options. You will see the references preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return to advice for the job seeker. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women to advance beyond dull jobs to find fulfilling work since the mid-1970s. I'm Evan Newman, and now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
We're back again to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Tom Board from Denver, Colorado, and Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. You can see Tom's picture and bio. Just click on Preferred Counselors. Just before the break, Tom, we were talking about Mary, who was a single mother and wanted to help other younger women that were first experiencing that angst of being single and having to raise kids. And Mary wants to change her job. Did you have any other items to add to Mary's situation?
No, I didn't. I thought that was really good what you said, John. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, you hear this thing a lot about you got to get a master's, and so then that door closes, and the person's just totally discouraged. they can get a job in an agency that's helping women, and most likely find a role of giving advice, literally touching those women, providing encouragement, and it doesn't require a licensed therapist. Okay, you got another job seeker question for us, Tom.
I do. This is from Melinda in Portland. She says, I've been a banking executive drawing a six-figure income. I would like to find a job where I can do photography and graphic arts. My search for employment has not been successful, as most employers are younger than I am and are intimidated by my position and income. How do I overcome this barrier to do a job I could love?
Yeah, well, this is an interesting dynamic where the person seeking the job may be overqualified, and not only that, but, well, appears to be overqualified, not only that, but doesn't have any tangible work experience where the person has drawn an income. So I think we have two barriers here. First is that image that Melinda is projecting when she goes and talks to employers, because they usually get around to, well, where do you work? Well, I work at XYZ Bank. And what do you do there? I'm a executive. and then you can tell this person's a little older than 30 years of age, and then this whole thing's downhill. So I think my advice to Melinda is to quit job hunting and start developing relationships. What Melinda needs to find is an individual that owns his or her own agency and begin a relationship whereby Melinda's employment history is not a barrier. And so my suggestion would be is that Melinda get a list of all the photography and graphic arts studios in town and begin informational interviewing with the owners and ask them how they got started, what they enjoy about their job. And that's usually the icebreaker. And if I have any additional questions, could I come back? And I'm really intrigued about the photography industry, the graphic arts industry. Once a relationship is established, then Melinda can say, you know, George, I've always thought about making a career change, and people are somewhat intimidated about my background and as a banking executive, but really that's my history, and I want to move forward into doing something that's really me. How would you recommend I approach this? And you do that after a strong trust bond has been developed with that agency owner, and possibly there might be something there for Melinda, or there might be something at another place because this person's networked. But Melinda does not go around with a resume in hand asking for a job or applying for jobs online. That just is not going to work. So what we have is the hidden job search that Melinda needs to undergo. It wouldn't hurt for Melinda to take some classes in graphic arts and photography at a local community college, not because she needs the training. She's probably beyond that. But she needs the relationship with the professor who teaches the class, who is a practitioner, him or herself. So that person becomes a resource of contacts that Melinda can benefit from and then go follow up. So that's how I would encourage Melinda to get over this hump. And it is a real hump. It's not, she hasn't just made this up. I can envision this. This is a big deal. Any other thoughts on this, Tom?
Well, I really like what you said. I know we've chatted before about the importance of relationship, and this is one of those places where, as you said so well, is it needs to be the way that it's kind of like a back door into it. As you build relationships and move into what you'd like to do through the back door, building a friendship and building an opportunity for them to get to know you so that you have something more than just being a banking executive that's really defining who you are as a person. So I really agree with what you had to say.
Yeah, you know, actually, we don't know how well Melinda's managed her finances, but as I'm thinking about it, if she's in banking, she's probably done a good job. And one thing she might do is buy herself a job, meaning that she would approach an owner and say, would you be open to being for me to help finance your business and to do that, own some shares. And so all of a sudden now she's now a business partner. And being a business partner, her background is now an asset rather than a liability. And you and I know that creative people can always use help in, quote, running the finances of the business. And so there we're off and running. But Melinda does not want to be labeled as the business manager or the finance manager. She wants to be a practitioner of art. But her foot in the door could be as a future partner and assist with the financial side of the business while she's doing the art. And then that might, you know, that might do it for her.
Great.
Any more questions, Tom?
Yeah, we have one more here from a gentleman named Max that I think is kind of intriguing from Seattle. And he says, I'm a business owner and would like a career change. I would like to be a coach to entrepreneurs who are just getting started. How do I find that type of job?
Ah, well, I do know this, that there are a lot of wannabe entrepreneurs out there that would love to take Max out to the Starbucks and pick his ear. And what do you think of this? What do you think of that? But having a job that you're getting paid to advise entrepreneurs is going to take a little effort. There is, to the best of my knowledge, there isn't a agency that does that. The Small Business Administration is where I would start. Tom, we're out of time.
All
thank
right.
you.
Enjoy.
Thank
it
you for
much.
Your help today.
So
great
that
show.
Finishes up our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He has been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored four career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide, and John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He has personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he features as preferred counselors on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group. They have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. I think all of us know someone who is unemployed or frustrated in their job search. Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening. Best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.